Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 835. This episode is very exciting because today is Halloween that this is going up. You may not be listening to it Halloween, but if you're not, I hope you had a nice Halloween. And if you are, happy Halloween. Be safe. Look out for traffic. Don't drink and drive. Don't text and drive. Don't put razor blades in apples. Don't put apples in razor blades. That's the harder one. There's some couple things on the Nerdist Community Corkboard. Number one, Friday, I will be performing November 4th in Boston at the Wilbur Theater with Mike Furman. Mike's going to do a set. I'm going to do a set. We'll do some songs. And it'll be like old times. So please come out. You can get tickets at id10t.com or just visit the Wilbur Theater's website. So hopefully we'll see you there. And Kyle Clark, Nerdist's own walk-around Muppet. Now, Kyle has been absent from the podcast for a while because he was hired as a writer's assistant over on Jonah Ray's Hidden America, and he is going directly from Hidden America and coming over to work on At Midnight. So our walk-around Muppet is growing up. I'm so proud of him. And then furthermore, he has a new album out called I'm a Person, and the cover of it is actually him as a walk-around Muppet, which is adorable. And I really want you to support Kyle. He's a brilliant, sweet guy, and it's available on iTunes, Amazon, more. CD copies can be bought at estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. So support Kyle Clark, and hopefully we'll get his chortles back here on the podcast soon enough. This episode is Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, or Cassandra Peterson, who plays Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. But I'm so... sometimes I feel like I need to be pinched that my reality is actually my reality. I mean, Elvira, I've been a fan of ever since I was a kid. I lived in Memphis when I first saw her show, and she is an incredible woman and has done so many amazing things, and is such, you know, I try to convince her to give lectures about how to create a thing and make it grow and keep it fresh, and she has such an interesting story that it's just stuff I didn't know and stuff that I know that you will not know. So I'm excited that she was on the podcast. I adore her. And she has a book that's out right now called Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. It's available on Elvira.com. It's a gorgeous photo book that's kind of a retrospective of her career. Big, beautiful coffee table book. So I highly recommend that you pick it up. And you still, I don't know how many more shows. Oh, maybe she's just finishing the Not Scary Farm shows because it's Halloween. But follow Elvira on Twitter and everywhere else, and always support her. She's a good human. And now make this the Nerdist Podcast number 835 with Cassandra Peterson, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Katie, is this podcast actually stretching? Or is it your imagination?
No, it's stretching right now. I'm legitimately stretching this intro. So I apologize. Katie, just let's... Boo.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I know, it's crazy. Well, I guess there's microphones here. We should probably...
Yeah. We should do something.
Do a pie. That's a great idea.
Oh, my God. This is fantastic.
This improvisationally came together so well. Now, the question I've always wanted to ask you is I've heard people say Cassandra and Cassandra.
It's Cassandra.
It is Cassandra. That's
yes.
What I thought.
Thank you.
But it's... Yeah,
people
fucking it up and you're too nice to correct them.
I just got over correcting people. I've just corrected them my whole life and finally I'm just like, fuck it.
Well, you could just be like, well, as Cassandra, yeah, I feel
I
that.
Said, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it's weird. My parents named me that, so what am I going to do? That's my name.
That is your name.
I know.
That's one of your names.
Yeah, one.
That is one of your names.
Hey, you're married now.
I am married now.
Holy
yeah, check
crap.
That out.
Let me see.
That's
me
a
see.
Wedding ring. Thank you.
Wow.
That's a strip of dinosaur bone, that's a strip of meteorite, and that's a strip of elk antler. Wow. I know.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I thought I was just going to have to get a boring old wedding ring. And then I saw one that was meteorite. And I was like, fuck, you could do that? And then I looked up dinosaur bones.
It's a Star Wars ring.
Oh, yeah. Meteorite. Oh, believe me. I was very tempted. But the thing about like something that specific, so I feel like it'd be fun for a while. And then, you know, like, yeah, you know.
After a while,
the Star Wars wallpaper everywhere.
Yeah, I saw that. So I was wondering why you didn't have a Star Wars ring.
So I just went more for science than I did for just for Star Wars. How are you?
Good. I mean, how are you? How's married life? That's what I want to know.
It's great. It's good. Oh, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's.
Did it change things?
Not really.
No.
I mean, it does on a. I think I've said it changes on a fundamental level where you're like, "Hey, that's my wife." You know, like.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of freaky, you know, huh?
Yeah, I'm not just gonna bolt if something goes wrong. Like, we're in this. Remember that.
Yeah. You just said that.
I do remember that I said that. This is audio proof that I said that. But day to day, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, I had a creepy dream about my ex-husband last night. Oh, my God. I was in like the ocean, but it was real calm and smooth. And we were like dancing sort of around in a circle together. And there was a shark going around us. And I knew that I had to kick the shark in the nose, but I was afraid it would open its mouth and my leg would go down.
Sure. You know, while you're dancing on the water with your ex-husband.
Yeah. Oh, God, what a creepy dream. I mean, that's perfect, though.
I feel like we could spend the whole episode just deconstructing that.
Yeah.
Who was the shark? Why did you want to kick him? What was your husband doing? Was he...
My husband was the shark.
He was the shark.
Yeah.
So you kick the shark and then your husband's nose starts bleeding. Yeah. And then everything, just the apocalypse happens.
Oh, God. Anyway,
who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Did you just see a shark thing, or was it
no, I've seen no shark things, nothing. I think when I think about my ex-husband, you know, I don't want to go there because you just got married. I don't want to sour the whole experience.
Cassandra, I had the shark dream. What does it mean? I had the shark dream. I kicked it in the nose. I think the first time I ever met you, I don't know if you remember this, might have been at Rob Zombie's house, probably, you know, Rob and Sherry used to have these barbecues.
Yeah.
When they lived in
Hancock God,
Park.
Did I? Yeah, I probably did meet you there. I went to a lot of those.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was at, I met you first at Brookledge, but no, I already had met you then.
Oh, yeah, Brookledge. Well, it just, yeah, I think I was probably too shy to say hello to you at Rob and Sherry's, and Rob might have been like, oh, do you know Cassandra? And I'm like, I know who you are. But yeah, it was a long time ago.
I love Rob. Oh,
I know.
Man.
I just realized I've known them for 21 years,
which
is when you start, like, I was very much an adult when I met them, and that was 21 years ago.
Yeah, wow. I've known them for a long, long time, too. I love, they came over one time, and I made them a rotisserie chicken in my, like, Ron Popeil's rotisserie oven, and they were, like, in love with it, so that's what I got them for their wedding. They were so happy.
Oh, that's great. So you were probably at the wedding where they, at their house,
mm-hmm.
where they came out, and they're like, we already got married, so just everyone have a party.
Yeah, I got there, and it was over.
No, they didn't have it.
Oh.
They had secretly,
I didn't know what happened. I thought it was just late.
No, everyone showed up thinking there was going to be a ceremony, and they were like, we already got married a few days ago, so everyone just have a party.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I felt bad all these years for being late.
I know. Now what are you going to do with all that extra energy that was weighing down on you all this time?
That was a great party. I just remember Lisa Marie and Nicolas Cage having a big
party. Oh, my God, that's right. They were hanging out with them for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
They were having the most gigantic fight there.
They did. They had a big fight.
Yeah.
What was it about?
Oh, well, you know, they were
your dad
married
was
or whatever.
Yeah, was, why can't I be your dad?
Yeah, and Dick Coppola's your uncle, damn you. Yeah, they were. I don't know what was going on there, but I just remember it's quite a little scene.
Did Lisa Marie, didn't you want a date with Elvis?
I did. I didn't want to tell Lisa Marie that I could be her mom. I never want to bring that up, really. You know, you don't want to say something like that to someone's, you know.
What is Elvis like on a date?
Well, he was adorable. He was super, super sweet. And he was being very kind of like, dare I say, fatherly. You know, but you know, with advice and you know, I was only 17.
Oh, okay,
and so
gotcha.
He was being really, really sweet to me and giving me advice. And honestly, he gave me the best advice I ever got, which was get the hell out of Las Vegas. I was 17, and he's like, this is no place for a young girl to be.
Oh, what a nice guy.
I know it was, because...
Hey, you want a house? I'll buy you a house.
He never asked me that. Damn it. I would have said yes. But he said, I was the youngest showgirl in Las Vegas history there, and I was... if it wasn't for Elvis, I would now be the oldest showgirl in Las Vegas history. I know I would. I'd still be there because I thought it was the pinnacle of show business. You know, I'd gotten to be a showgirl. I was 17 years old. I was like, what? It was crazy.
Well, you were from Kansas?
Yeah, Kansas at first. I grew up in Kansas first on a farm, and then we moved into the big city, Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
The Little Apple.
That's right.
And then we moved to Colorado Springs when I was 7 because they flooded my town that we lived in. We lived in a town called Randolph, which was 20 miles outside of Manhattan, and they flooded it to make a dam. And so
they just ruined your day. They were like, hey, everyone, get out.
Yeah. One day it was just like, get out. And they gave you some money. My relatives, my grandparents, my uncles, my aunts, everybody just had to evacuate.
And what was it about Vegas that seemed appealing?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I was very... My parents were always sticking me up on tables and making me dance, and people would throw money when I was like 3 or 4. So I know. Didn't you mean your parents didn't do that with you?
Well, you know what's funny is that they kind of did whenever I didn't dance, but whenever my parents' friends would come over, because I was so obsessed with stand up comedy from the time I could talk, just do other people's routines, which I'm sure is really irritating if you have to go over and watch someone's fucking kid like tell Steve Martin jokes. But
oh my God.
That was kind of baked in. That performance thing was baked in.
It made you want to be the center of attention, is that right? That's what happened to me.
Yeah. And
look at me, everybody.
Well, how do you go to Vegas and, like, at that point you just go to a casino and go, hey, I want to be a showgirl, and they go, okay.
No, it was so bizarre. I was on a vacation with my mom and dad. We were going to California to visit our aunt and uncle, and me and my two sisters, and I had just seen Viva Las Vegas with Anne Margaret and Elvis Presley,
mm-hmm.
and I was obsessed with the movie. I just kept going to it, and I was dreaming about it, thinking about it, and I decided I wanted to be Anne Margaret's character in the movie, kind of like a Vegas performer.
Sure.
So when we got to Vegas, I was just turned 17 then, and I begged my parents to let me go to one of the big, we call them tits and feathers show back. That's not what I called it to my parents, but that's what they were called. And I begged them to let me go. So they finally said yes. I had a fake ID, conveniently. So I said, I'll use my ID. And so I put on a wiglet, made my hair super high, put on
eyelashes. Your parents
are
very cool, by the way.
Sort of. I mean, well, it wasn't as much as begging as it was threatening.
Oh, gotcha.
So I had this Fredericks of Hollywood bra that I made this gigantic cleavage. And so I went in looking pretty, you know, probably like a hooker, but I don't know. But when I went in, I had so much makeup and everything on that the maitre d' said, oh, you must be a showgirl here in Las Vegas. And I was like, no, I don't think so. You know, I was afraid of getting busted for being underage. And I sat us down. A minute later, he brings the dance captain, this woman named Fluffy. And she... Yeah, I know. And she said, do you know how to dance? I said, yes, I'm a dancer. I've taken dance all my life. And she goes, well, come backstage. And I go back there. She gets the stage manager. They put on some music. They watch me dance. And they say, we're starting to audition tomorrow for a new show here in Vegas. Would you like to be in it?
That is preparation meeting opportunity.
I mean, yeah, is that bizarre? So next day, we went and saw the producer. He hired me. Then my parents took me back to Colorado Springs, screaming and crying the whole way, because my parents said, there's no way in hell you're going to dance.
You were just
semi-naked.
Supposed to go to the show.
Yes.
And then you ended up becoming
part
of the show. Right.
Right. So they were not having any of it. And finally, the producer of the show kept calling and calling my parents. And I kept making my parents' life a living hell.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, running away and just horrible stuff. And finally, they signed the document, kind of signed me over to Las Vegas. Got a lawyer, signed a document.
Just to make it stop.
Yep. And I went. And I just went there and started, when I was Just the day I graduated from high school, I graduated when I was 17. I actually jumped in my car and took off for Vegas and started rehearsals for the show.
Was it fun?
It was really bizarre. It was. I mean, I couldn't go through the casino. I couldn't drink. I did all those things, though, but I wasn't supposed to.
Sure.
And
but you could dance topless.
Yes, that's the crazy thing. You could dance topless in a show, but you couldn't drink. You could. I mean,
you're underage. Take your shirt off. Whoa, hey, that feels weird.
Is that the most bizarre thing ever?
That
really?
Is Vegas, I guess.
I don't think they do that anymore.
No. I think probably not. I think they probably don't do that anymore.
So I got a really great education there really fast, you know? And it was Vegas back in, I mean, this is how freaking old I am. Back in the days of like the Rat Pack and stuff, you know,
sure.
Frank Sinatra was there. And
did you meet any of those guys?
I met them all. It was awesome. I went to Frank Sinatra's, I think it was 50th birthday party or something. He was a total jerk to me. Anyway, he really was. I hate to say
I always hear so many stories about what a nice, gentle person he is. That's so bizarre.
Oh, yeah, do you?
That.
Really?
So bizarre. No, never. Not one.
Yes, there you go. They're all true. But, yeah, just meeting. Sammy Davis Jr. came to see the show. I did a really crazy thing when he was there. I took a – you know, he had a glass eye.
Yeah.
So I happened to have a glass eye that I had just bought in Tijuana. And I glued it to my nipple. I don't know why. I did. Just as a little joke.
That's the best thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, my God. Thank God he thought it was the best thing he'd ever heard. He did that Sammy Davis Jr. laugh, you know, that...
That is,
you know,
fantastic.
That thing. Oh my God! He came backstage and he thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever seen. I thought I was going to get fired because before he came back, everybody in the show that was, you know, stage manager and everybody else came back and they were, they were not happy.
Cool once Sammy was cool?
Yes. Then it would like, oh, thank God! He thought it was fantastic. So
he's
a nice guy.
He was the expense of a lot of Rat Pack jokes. Like, if you watch those roasts, they said horrible things to him.
That was
probably one of the nicer jokes that was played on Sammy Davis Jr.
Probably, yeah. He was kind of like their little bitch.
Kind of a punching bag, yeah. But that's fantastic.
I mean, that is
that little extra sauce. It's like, oh, yeah, this person's special. You know, like, they think outside the box a little bit. They would glue a glass eye to their nipple.
Why not? Wouldn't you? You have one glued to your nipple right now, right?
I do, yeah. Well, I have two. This eyeball's real on this nipple, and then I have a glass eyeball on this nipple over here.
I know. I only had one, so I had to just use that one. But anyway, so fun things like that happening in Vegas.
How long
then.
Was did that last?
1 year. A year and 3 months counting rehearsals. So, and then my contract was 1 year. And by the end of a year, I really, really wanted to get the hell out of there. And also, Elvis had told me, get out of here.
Right.
And so a couple of the guys in the show were moving to Paris to do a show, and I left with them and moved to Paris. So that was interesting.
Not to get too racy, but any good hookup stories in Vegas? Someone coming through? Come on.
You made me choke my wife.
Sorry. One fun hookup story that you talk about?
Well, perhaps you probably heard it. About Tom Jones. I'm gagging.
Heard maybe
you heard
a rumor or two. Is that true?
Oh,
is that a
God.
True story?
It is true. I was like kind of, yeah, that was the, I was a virgin, not dancing in this show. I was still a virgin and ended up with Tom Jones. I'd kind of fooled around with somebody from my town before, but apparently we didn't fool around good enough because... I don't know. Anyway, yes, Tom Jones.
That's
he came
a pretty...
and saw the show. So, yeah. Oh, my God.
And then you hooked up with Tom Jones.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Now, is that surreal? As that's happening, like, what is happening with my life?
Yeah, I mean, one thing after another. It was just crazy. I don't know. I was, you know, I was kind of a bit of a groupie anyway. I'd spent, like, my teen years running all over the countryside chasing bands. So.
Right.
But I was still a virgin. That was the really tricky part. I can't tell you how many hotel rooms I was kicked out of. It was amazing. I mean, like Eric Burden from Eric Burden and the Animals. Well, then he was with War. Like, took my car keys and put them down his pants. And I'm like trying to get them. And I'm going out. And I'm threatening to call the police. And oh my God, just stories like that with bands. So when it came to Tom Jones, it was still sort of the same thing. I mean, Elvis, Tom Jones, they're musicians, you know, and sure. I was just this music freak.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately, it wasn't Elvis, but it ended up being Tom Jones.
Hey, you know what? Don't feel bad. I'm telling you, I probably would have fucked Tom Jones, all right? So I totally get it.
I think I heard you did.
No. Yeah, I did. You can put that on my Wikipedia page right now. This is now officially sourced. But a year in Vegas, and then did you go directly west to Los Angeles?
No, I went to Paris. I went to Europe, and I was going to be in another big TNA show there on – it was the Lido, I think the Lido de Paris on Champs-Élysées, and I was rehearsing for that show, and I hated it, hated every second of it. The French girls did not like the fact there was an American girl, and she was only 18, and they were all in their 30s, and they made my life a living hell during rehearsal, and I quit.
The French? No.
No, I know, I know.
What?
And I moved to Italy with another one of the showgirls from my show. She came over from my show in Vegas. She came over. We moved to Italy. Started going around singing. We found a Brazilian guitar player, and we decided she and I would start singing. I don't know where that came from. And we started doing nightclubs and stuff. And then we started doing little parts in movies. I met Federico Fellini and was in Roma and started getting little bit parts in different movies, like Le Orevole Piacciono alla Donna. I'm sure you've heard of that one. And then I did that one. And then met this guy who was a songwriter who knew about a band who was looking for a female front man. So I ended up singing in this band. And that was also due to Elvis, because Elvis, when I was with him, he actually played the piano, and we sat there and we sang together. And he was telling me, you know, you have a decent voice. You ought to get vocal lessons and, you know, forget
this
dancing. Go out and sing, you know. It's ridiculous. I know.
I mean, your life is – I mean, it's like there's – you've hit so many things already, and you're barely 18 at this point.
I know. I always tell people my life was so much more interesting before I became Elvira, you know. Then everything calmed down.
Yeah, because that was a pretty stable gig once that started.
Yeah, stable gig. And people think, oh, it must be so exciting to be Elvira. And it is, and it has been. But my life was way wackier before, just about getting to Elvira, you know.
Wow, because I know you were in Groundlings
for 4.5 years, yeah.
So how are you, because at that time, getting into improv sketch comedy is not, like, now I feel like it's a thing that people do all the time. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do improv. There's a ton of improv.
Yeah.
But at the time, was it a common thing to do? How did you even think to do that? Why comedy? Why Groundlings?
Yeah, I did not even know what the hell improv was. I'd never heard of it. And a couple friends of mine took me to see the Groundlings, went way, way before they're on Melrose now. They were down, I don't know, near Western Santa Monica somewhere. And they took me there. And it was one of those things. You know, when you were a kid, did you see something and go, that is what I want to do?
Stand up.
This is what I want
to
do.
Yeah. You know, my parents took me to Vegas when I was a kid all the time.
Yeah. So you got that. That's just.
I didn't end up as a showgirl, though.
No. Well.
Yeah. They took me home. I was like 6.
Oh, good. You were too young to be a showgirl.
Yeah, but they were very cool about, like, oh, let's go see the shows. They took me to see Steve Martin. They took me to see Johnny Carson.
Oh, did they? Because you were into it. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So you saw
that's kind of how it just hit me like that. I said, I want to do that, whatever it is they're doing. Probably because I couldn't remember scripts ever or remember lines. I thought it'd be much better to do comedy.
Sure.
And make it up as you go along.
Yeah.
And I'd always been sort of into being funny. I don't know. When I was a kid, I was teased a lot about my scars. I had been that was scalded with water. I'd been burned, so 35% of my body is skin grafting. So
really?
Elvira only shows the good parts. That dress is like fantastic.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, when I was on the farm, my mother was boiling Easter eggs, and I was a year and a half old and climbed up and grabbed the boiling pot of water and pulled it over on me. So. It was a very close call. It was amazing that I lived, because generally back then, if you were burned over 35% of your body, you didn't survive. So they had just started using penicillin. It was like they gave it to me experimentally. And I made it through. So they moved me to a big burn center in Kansas City. So I had all this skin grafting. So when I was a kid, I was always teased about it relentlessly. So the way I dealt with it was sort of self-deprecating humor.
Sure.
I made jokes about it. And, you know, I was very kind of standoffish and kind of a loner. When people called me a monster or something, I'd, you know, just laugh along with them. And so I think that's how I got into really wanting to be a comedian. I mean, do you find that a lot of comedians, I don't know if anything happened to you, but a lot of them were like teased for being overweight.
No question, because comedy is like a defense mechanism. Like, I don't know how we would deal with life if we didn't have that thing to at least deflect some of the horrible things that happen. I mean, that's really crazy. So in a way, if that hadn't happened, maybe none of this would have happened because you might have just not developed
exactly.
That.
I say, you know, one of the worst things that could have happened turned into probably the best thing that could have happened to me. Kind of fighting against that all my life, you know.
But as a showgirl, could you see any of it?
Luckily, I was a year and a half old. I grew up to, you know, be fairly tall and everything. So the skin grafting really, really smoothed out. It's discolored.
Oh, wow.
But I went in every night an hour early, had head to toe body makeup. That was a real bummer. I had to go before everybody and have a woman put on like pan stick makeup from head to toe. And then I could go on and do the show. So basically just got rid of the discoloration. When I was little, it was much like more puffy and wrinkly.
Sure, but then you're developing so much.
Yeah, you probably so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Much smoother. And I mean, when you see people like, you know, Kane Hodder, he's a friend of mine. He used to be a stuntman, and then he was Jason. And he was burned more recently, and because of that, I mean, the burns look horrible because he was his full adult size, you know. They don't get better. But I've also had 21, 22 surgeries on various parts of my skin.
And the technology, I assume, now is light years.
Oh, so much better now. But I started having surgeries to get rid of some of the lumps and bumps and stuff in the skin grafting when I was probably 20.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how old were you when you came to the Groundlings?
When I got to the Groundlings, let's see, by the time I got to L.A., I was probably 25 or 6,
So you'd spent
a
handful of years in Europe and tooling around performing. And then, so what made you decide to come to L.A.?
I was performing in a club in a show called Fantasies of Love au Naturel.
That's got a bunch
perhaps
of sexy
you've
words
heard
in
of
there.
It. It was at the Playboy Club in Miami.
Oh, my God, the Playboy Club.
Oh, the Playboy Club. So I worked there for like 6 months as a dancer
Those really were a cool thing at one point.
And then they were like happening, you know. They were really, really hot then. And this was on Miami Beach, which this one didn't last as long, but it was right next to the Fontainebleau on Miami Beach. And it was a very happening place. So it was this big Paris review, and I was the lead nude and a singer. And I met this guy who was a dancer and singer in the show, and we fell in love. And he lived in L.A. and asked me to move back with him. So I did. And L.A. was somewhere I never wanted to go. I don't know why. I'd gone there on vacations with my family in the past and just thought it was too big and too scary. You know,
that's correct. That's amazing.
And,
did you feel that because of what you had gone through with the burn and also all the work you had done up to that point, did you become just really comfortable with your body at that point?
I did. I went the opposite way. People go, but why weren't you shy? I mean, there is not a picture of me as a kid where I'm not wearing a black turtleneck with long sleeves.
Right.
And I don't care how hot it is outside.
Right.
I never learned to swim because I wouldn't wear a swimming suit. I would not show off my body. Puberty struck, and all of a sudden, I'm like, taking my clothes off. I mean, I became a go-go girl when I was 14, so I was dancing in little fringy outfits and stuff, and just, you know, covering up the scars as best as I could with makeup. And I don't know, I went completely opposite. Like, I am going to show off my body. I don't know where that came from. What happened?
Well, I think it's
I'm
good.
I'm still trying to figure that out.
No, and I think it's at least, it sounds healthier than you know, than beating yourself up and trying to hide and being afraid of the world.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's a good.
I did that for a long time.
Yeah, I think it's a good. I think it's a good thing for people to hear who maybe have something that they're, you know, insecure about or stressed about, or that maybe it's not as big of a deal as they think it is.
Yeah, it was kind of like coming out. You know,
sure.
It was like, okay, I've been hiding here for a million years with my scars and everything, and now I'm just going to go completely the opposite direction and just take my clothes off wherever
everything.
I can. Woohoo!
Now, is it so? You moved to LA with this because of this guy.
Yeah.
Did that relationship last very long?
It lasted for a while. We stayed friends forever for the rest of his life. He died. All my boyfriends are dead. They all died. Now, don't get the wrong idea. It lasted a while, about a year. But he was great because he was a singer and songwriter, and he kind of introduced me to people in the biz and everything. You know, I mean, he was a young guy struggling too, but we lived up in Beechwood Canyon. And,
oh, wow.
And, you know, kind of a bohemian kind of area, and it was just awesome. And I don't know, I decided, you know, I'm not going to keep running off on tours. I kept leaving even LA. I had a band called Mama's Boys, and we went around and toured for about almost 2 years all over the U.S. And then finally I said, I got to stay somewhere. I had never stayed in one place, you know, hardly longer than a year for my whole life, so... I decided I wanted to stay in LA, and when I saw the Groundlings, I was going, this is it. This is what I want to do. I'm not leaving anymore. I'm going to be broke as hell. I don't care. I'm just going to stay here and concentrate on doing comedy improv.
No, did you have to start taking the classes?
Yes, and back then I was lucky because if you paid the money, you were a groundling.
Right.
Now, you know, my God, you have to go through years. It's a major process.
You have to go through all the classes, and then space has to open up,
and you have to be voted on, and you know, oh my God, it can take people years and years to become a groundling.
Right.
Then it was like, hey, you got $35 a week. Come on in. So that was awesome. And there weren't that many people in the company. There were Lorraine Newman had just left, and she went to do this brand new show called Saturday Night Live. And we were like, whoa, I wonder how that's going to be.
Oh, wow.
And I was in there with Phil Hartman and Paul Rubens, Pee-wee, and John Paragon, who later became my writing partner for 21, 25 years, something like that. But all the people in the ground. I mean, isn't it amazing how many people come out of that damn thing?
Oh, yeah. It's nuts.
Crazy.
I mean, I knew Paul and Phil. I didn't know you were in with Paul and Phil.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole time.
Did you guys work as a team together?
We did. We did a lot of sketches that were together. I mean, there were a lot of group sketches that we were all in. I used to be Phil's girlfriend several times in Chick Hazard. Phil and I did a play called Waco that we did with a few of the other groundlings where I played his girlfriend, and we wrote it, and we did it after, like the Pee Wee Herman show, we did it after the groundlings in the evenings on a certain night, and unfortunately never quite took off like the Pee Wee Herman show, probably because it was about poor Texas white trash who sold drugs. So so Phil and I did that together, and I mean every night we were doing sketches together with John and Paul and me, and I was so close to Paul and John Paragon and Phil. I felt like I was the fourth musketeer there. I just loved those guys. I worshiped them, and they were kind of my idols in the show. I mean, there were a lot of brilliant people in the show, but I just honed in on them, and I just wanted to be with them every second so I could learn everything I could from them.
Were there other characters that you thought, oh, this is going to be the thing that either breaks me out, or oh, this is Paul's thing, and then those.
Yeah, well, Paul had a dozen freaking characters that were as good as Pee-wee, you know? I mean, he had this one Jay Longtoe. It's just so amazing where he just wore a loincloth and a giant Native American headdress, like for a chief, and he danced on his toes in his Converse tennis shoes. He danced on his toes while he smoked a cigarette and sang lounge songs.
That's
it was awesome.
But he incorporated some of that into Pee-wee.
He did the dancing on the toes. That's true. That's where that came from, Jay Longtoe. And he had some other Moses Feldman, who was like a cartoonist, the creator of Little Yehudi. oh my God, he had just some brilliant characters. I, on the other hand, really had no characters. I was not good at coming up with characters. I always played the bimbo, the showgirl, the hooker, the patient at the gynecologist's office.
Did that bother you at the time? You're like, hey, I want to do other stuff than...
It didn't bother me. It's kind of what I've been doing all my life. And they needed that character, you know? Edie McClure couldn't play it. Somebody had to do it.
Right. Oh, Edie was in there, too, at the same
Edie
time.
Edie was in the same
was
time.
Was Pat Morita in with you guys? Or
Pat had left already. He was just going out when I was coming in. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were all mind-boggled, too, because people were leaving to go do TV shows. It was like, what? So somebody had to be the groundling sex symbol, and I think it was up to me. So I certainly filled a void there that needed to be filled, but I never came up with solid characters. But I did do this character that was an actress and sort of a dippy valley girl character that the director of the local television horror host show came and saw, and he loved that character. He thought it was hilarious. And invited me to come and audition for this horror hosting gig on the local TV channel. And he said, I want you to do that character you were doing. I go, but that's like not horror. That doesn't go with it. You know, he's like, nah, it doesn't matter. You know, it's great. Yeah, just do that. I end up getting the part. And then he goes, now come up with a look that's scary. And I'm going, so I do that character. It's like a valley girl, whatever. And I wear black. And he goes, yeah, that'll be great. So anyway, I did it, and I thought I really didn't have much faith that it was going to go past like a week, you know? I really didn't.
But then you became famous instantaneously.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it was a week or two, and I was like getting invited on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and I had to take my name out of the phone book. Can you believe when you actually put my name and number in the phone book? And back then, that's what you did.
That's what you had to get your number. Yeah, I think you could pay a little bit extra to have an unlisted number.
Yes, I don't even know if you could then. But you know what? I wanted to be in the phone book so people could call me for acting jobs. But
that's so nuts.
Yeah, it was crazy. So
I mean, I remember I was living in Memphis at the time. But I remember when I first saw Elvira. It was probably – when did it syndicate right away or did they
– No, it was about – God, I'm so bad at timing.
Like
it was 2 or 3 years before
it
became syndicated.
Right, I feel like it was about 83 maybe, if I'm remembering. It was about 82, 83.
Yeah, I started the show in 81 and then I think the syndication thing came out about 83.
Wow.
But before the syndication thing came out, I had made several appearances on national TV.
Right.
In, like Chips. I was a character on Chip. I was in Stroker Ace with Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that was fantastic. And all these little parts. So people started wondering, what the hell is that?
Right.
And then I got the Coors campaign, which although the Coors campaign didn't pay a lot, it got me really great national recognition.
Wow.
And that's kind of how I got the syndicated show. So we were able to open it up to the whole rest of the country. So that was, phew.
It's pretty crazy that Elvira was sort of the recipe for it had been brewing with everything that happened to you up to that point. That if anything was even slightly different, that wouldn't have happened.
I know.
Going back
it's
to getting
bizarre.
Scalded and then becoming a showgirl and getting improv trained, like everything.
I know. It just and I really didn't know where it was going. I didn't have any kind of a hard and fast plan. I was going, I know I want to be the center of attention, damn it. Just like when they were throwing pennies at me and I was singing, how much is that doggy in the window?
but you never know.
I have to show you a really bizarre picture in my new book.
Yes, the Elvira, Mistress of the Dark book.
But I'm going to show you while
which is
we
gorgeous.
Were...
gorgeous. That is a gorgeous coffee table.
Thank you. While we were putting this together, I showed Chad Colbank, who put this thing together.
Hi, Chad.
I showed him a picture that my mom sent to me. And she said, do you remember this? And I said, no. I was 5 years old.
Oh,
she made me this black and orange crepe paper dress. And she asked me what I wanted to go as for Halloween. And I said to my mom, what was that supposed to be? And she goes, you wanted to be the queen of Halloween.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
I mean, so look. There
it was foretold.
It was foretold. I mean, how bizarre is that?
And then you became the queen of Halloween.
I became the queen of Halloween.
I mean, I always wonder with... like with a character like Elvira or even for, you know, like Pee-wee for Paul, like, is there a certain point where you feel trapped in the character. You're like, God, I'd really love to do other stuff, but it's such a good, fun gig. I don't, you know, like, what's the balance?
Yeah, I went through a little period of that in the beginning where I was thinking, oh, I should do other stuff too, and, you know, do other characters, do other parts as myself. And then the reality hits that, first of all, I own the character. Pee-wee owns his character.
Right.
And that's a whole different ballpark.
That's huge.
You're not one of the monkeys or something, or, you know, in Star right. Wars trying to go out and sign autographs and you can't even keep all the money.
Right.
You know, you own everything. And so...
How did you engineer that?
Wow. It was kind of an accident. But luckily, my two managers at the time... we kept asking for more money from KHJ every year, and they were so cheap. That was the local station here. Yeah. They were so cheap they wouldn't give me more money. So I was making like $300, $350 a week. And but they said, we said, well, could we at least have the rights to do a fan club? Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah, sure. So they signed off the rights of fan club. Later, we said, could we have the rights to be on other TV shows? Sure, sure, you can have that in the rent. Do we have the rights to, like, make licensed products? Oh, okay. Wow. And before they knew it, they'd signed all the rights away.
That would never happen now.
Never. Oh. But, you know, it was so, so lucky it happened because they lost their license not long after. And RKO General had a big something about illegal contributions to the Nixon campaign or something. Yeah. And they lost a bunch of their stations, and KHJ was one of the ones that was lost and went into bankruptcy. And the Elvira character would have gone into bankruptcy, probably never to be seen again, you know?
So did you jump to another LA station at that point?
No. I stayed in the I stayed at KHJ shooting and everything until we did the syndicated show, and that played out for about 5 to 7 years. But then my movie came along. And after we did the film, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, I didn't go back to hosting horror movies. I'd really kind of had it, with the hosting. I loved it. I wanted to do it later, and I did it in a lot of video collections.
Sure.
And I've done it since on a small syndicated scale and for Hulu last year and different things. Finding the movies is the hard part.
Sure.
But no, that was it. I was out of KHJ. That was the end of the real, you know, the old horror hosting days, which I really miss. I really love doing that.
Have you ever given talks on how to grow a business? I mean,
I have.
You have?
Yeah. Even I did a big speech where I got paid and everything to talk to Disney. They had all the people working at Disney, and I went in and gave a talk about how to build brands.
I mean... Have you ever thought about maybe making that available to the, you know, like to, I mean, that is a, you cannot deny the fact that, you know, for 35 years, this character is so much a part of our culture now, and you did that. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think that story is really interesting, and I think would probably benefit a lot of people who are looking to do.
Yeah, I do too, because I think I have some pretty good advice on all of those things. So that's good. You put that out there. Maybe they'll start calling. What the heck?
I mean, you could just do it. I feel like you could just do it. I don't even know if you'd need someone to do it. You could
put a seminar like Tony Robbins or something.
Well, I mean, or something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
Like that would instruct people who have like some sort of a creative concept, even if it's not a character, but some sort of a creative concept. And how do you, you know, obviously there's a little bit that's I know you can't control,
right?
But
yeah, there's a lot. Some of it's luck, but some of it is, there's definitely ways to go and things to do and things not to do, that's for sure.
I think there's less luck in the world than people think. I think when you really sort of peel back the layers, you realize that something that seemed like luck was the fruit of a seed that you maybe unconsciously planted through choices that
you were
making.
I'm actually with you on that. I actually argue with people and say, you know, I don't want to sound like... not humble, but I say, I don't think there's any such thing as luck, honestly. I think, well, she was just lucky. He was just lucky. You know, you're ready. The timing is right. If you're prepared. I mean, I'd been a dancer and taking dancing lessons since I was 3 years old and then been a go-go dancer and everything. So when that Vegas thing came along, They could have come over and say, hey, do you know how to dance? And I could have, oh, I've never danced before, you know, and that would have been the end right there.
Yeah.
Or you could say, yes, I'm a dancer. I know how to dance. Yeah.
Yeah. In most cases, I think you do make your own luck.
I do too.
And it's things kind of reveal along the way. But if you hadn't made all those choices up to that point, it wouldn't click.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like one example is like I was walking down the street in Rome. And Federico Fellini was shooting his movie Roma. And people go, I mean, how lucky was that you ran into him? And they go, actually, I was walking down the street and this guy, Stuart Birnbaum, came up to me. And Stuart had made a documentary about showgirls in Vegas when I was there. And I had been in the documentary. And he was there and he was a student director with Fellini.
Wow.
And he came running up to me and my other friend who was a showgirl at also, you know, that I talked about that came with me over to Rome. And he came running up and said, hey, oh my gosh, you know, Stuart Birnbaum, remember me? We made that documentary. And then he said, do you want to meet Mr. Fellini? And we're like, do I? And he took me over there and Fellini said to me, oh my God, you look like my wife, Julieta Messina, when she was really young. And he said, You know, would you like to work in the film? Would you like to work in the film? Yes, yeah, sure. Why
I
not?
I drop you keys into my pants. Oh, come on. Not this shit again. Oh, I don't know how you find them. All right, Fellini. Give me the fucking keys. I'll be in your movie.
Oh, no. Thank God. Thankfully, he was just one of the nicest guys.
Oh, that's great. Nothing,
yeah. No, none of the monkey business there. He was awesome. But you know, it wasn't just like la-li-la. I'm walking down the street. Fellini runs out of a store. Hey, would you want to be in my film? You know, there was some little preparation, things that had happened.
Right.
I don't know. It was, you know, luck, coincidence. I don't know.
And how did, because of the nature of the Elvira character, and also, you know, particularly at a time when I imagine women had less respect, how are you navigating the business and how are you... You know, people are like, she's the vampire lady with the boobs. And you're like, no, I'm smarter than you. And, you know, like, how do you navigate all of that during that time period?
Yeah, just during the Elvira
time
period. Yeah, it has been tricky because the boobs are a big part. Well, actually, there are a couple of big parts of the Elvira character. And I wouldn't trade them for the world. I love them. I've made my whole entire life out of them. They're like my best friends. They really are. I mean, every job I've ever had is dependent on my boobs, kind of, you know?
Sure.
So trying to just get across to men that you have a brain, or even that you have a head, because they don't even look
right
below, you know, above my neck, has been really difficult. You just keep kind of... It's kind of a very Elvira thing. You just keep sort of plowing ahead like, yeah, fuck you. And, you know,
yeah.
You just keep going ahead. I don't care what you say. I'm still going to do this. And the guys that, a lot of really slimy guys,
sure,
coming on to you, you know, and, oh, my God, I went on an audition. A guy stood up behind his desk and he was wearing no pants. You know? I mean, stuff like that. They figure, oh, she's coming in there with that, you know, she's got that kind of cleavage. She must be a slut.
Right.
And I think proving to people that you're not, you know, just because you are showing off your assets,
right.
I think other women really appreciate that because women have to go through this crap all the time.
Of course.
I mean, every time you try to look sexy, it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
Sexy means stupid.
Right.
It's great that there are women out there now who I talk about, like, I have a huge gay following. And they go, what do they love so much about Elvira? And I say maybe the same thing they like about Madonna or Cher. It's a woman who is sexy but strong and doesn't take any crap, mm-hmm, from guys. There are just a few out there. Otherwise, you have to look like Margaret Thatcher if you're smart. Or if you're really, really sexy, then you're Kim Kardashian, you
right
know? There is a between place where you can look sexy and be smart.
Right. Well, people are lazy, you know, and so and
they
so it's easy.
Just put you in a category.
Exactly. That's
just
exactly
like,
right.
Yeah.
It's just lazy. It's just lazy. I mean, yeah. I think the most offensive thing, one of the most offensive things about that is that it's just like, it's just not giving a person individual consideration for just being the individual that they are. It's like, oh, you're this. You're this, you know?
Exactly. So. And you know, especially in high school, you know, oh, you have big boobs, you're a slut. Right. That is automatic. You know, I think I was the only virgin that graduated from my high school. I really do. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and managed to hang on to your virginity as a Vegas showgirl for a while.
Yes.
Which is spectacular.
Ridiculous, I know. Insane, kind of. But yeah, but you are just branded like, you know, because of your body. I mean, I really woke up when I was like 14. Puberty happened, and I just had these giant boobs. It was like they were overnight. Just boom. And it changed everybody's opinion about me, and generally not in a great way.
Sure.
You know, I was like made fun of and pushed around and shoved by girls at the school.
Fuck,
the guys all wanted to jump you.
Basically, they were just going to make fun of you no matter what.
It was. It was like, I just wanted to get the hell out of school. I really hated my years in school. I hate to say that. Kids, you stay in school, though. I do. I mean it. But I had a hard time. It was just not a good thing for me. And I flunked drama.
How do you flunk drama?
The drama teacher tries to put the make on you, and then you don't give in to him,
gross.
And then you get an F.
That's so gross.
I know.
He gives you an F because you wouldn't give him an F? Come on.
Mr. Osborne, if you're out there.
You're dead, Mr. Osborne. You're not alive anymore, Mr. Osborne. You're way dead.
I think so, probably.
So what are some of the things that just like, you know, nickel bits of advice that you would give people who have a thing that they want to grow, and how do you, you know, how would
a
you...
A thing that they want to
grow? Yeah, like an environment, like a creative thing, like a creative idea, a brand building thing, like
okay.
some of the hits of a thing that they want to grow.
Yeah, okay. I know exactly what you mean.
I am wearing pants behind this desk.
Okay, are you really?
Very clear. Yeah, there's pants. There's pants.
Okay, I think my best piece of advice sort of about a brand or an unusual, like building a character that you could then build upon, is the Chinese menu direction. Here's what I do. You pick one from column A and one from column B. And that is what accidentally happened with me when I developed the Elvira character. Mm-hmm. I didn't set out to do that, but the director saw me in this wacky Valley Girl ditzy actress character. And then he said, but you have to wear a spooky-looking outfit. Those two things together, I thought, were the worst idea ever. And I was sure it was going to be canceled after the first week. Turned out to be a brilliant idea, because if I had gone in and they told me, we want you to be this spooky character that hosts horror movies, I know I would have gone in and done a, like, come in, darling, drink a glass of blood. Mm. You know, I would have done that, because they go, you're a horror host. The fact that the guy wanted that other character, but then wanted this look, made a completely unique character.
Sure.
So now this is about developing characters, you know. But it's kind of like just think outside the box. Don't do, you know, really pick one thing over here and put it with a look or something that just doesn't seem to go together at all. And all of a sudden you're unique.
And try to own it.
And try to own it.
Don't sell
your
character. Don't sell your thing right away.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I that's kind of my best advice I can give on coming up with a character and building one.
Yeah.
Paul is a little peewee, is a little bit that way, in that he's this child man.
Yeah.
He acts like a child, but he wears a suit and a tie and is a grown man.
Yeah.
You put those two things together, it's kind of like a mashup.
He sent us a great wedding present, by the way.
So weird. Uh-oh, what did he send
you? It was hilarious. It is, you know the paintings at the Haunted Mansion that follow you?
Yeah.
Because that, like, the faces follow you because they're like these concave paintings and the shadows.
Yeah.
He sent us a statue and it was that, but it was of Jesus and it says, Jesus is watching you.
So I've seen that one.
So when you turn the light on and wherever you go, the face follows you.
I've seen it. I wonder if he gave you his personal one, his own personal Jesus, or if he...
No, it was a brand new one.
Another one. Oh,
it was
good.
A brand new one. And he also gave us these two little books. One was Rules for Husbands from like 1915, and the other was Rules for Wives from 1915.
Oh, my God. Now you just have to swap those.
Now we got to swap those. Yeah, we'll just gender swap the roles.
Well, I feel really crappy now because I didn't send you anything.
No, you don't.
But I'm giving you this book.
You're giving me a book, and you have no idea how delightful it was to me that A, you had any idea who I was, and B, that you know, that Because when I saw you at Rob's birthday a couple of years ago, we hung out for a while.
Yeah.
And no one was paying attention to the amazing Beatles cover band.
Which were fantastic, they were weren't they?
Incredible.
Oh, my daughter was dancing to them. She was the only one. There were her and her friend dancing to them, and everybody else was in the other room.
They were in the other room. That band was so good.
They covered
like every era of the Beatles.
And they looked like them. It was amazing. They were so great.
But I still like, if you send me a direct message on Twitter or shoot me an email, so I'm like, oh, Elvira, message me. Like, good. it's so great.
Oh, thank you.
You're such a part of our culture.
Nerd world.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's great about Elvira, I mean, do you ever think, well, I think I've done her enough. I don't know if I want to do her anymore. Or do you still like?
I still like doing and everything. I think there's got to be an expiration date there somewhere before I get really like, oh my God, look at her. She's still wearing an outfit. Would you tell me when that happens, Chris?
No, never, never stop.
Somebody's got to tell me.
It's not going to, Elvira's not going to be like the Dread Pirate Roberts, right? Where you.
I hope not.
Where you pass on the.
Oh, well, I tried that. It didn't really work.
No, you did?
Yeah. Well, I had this show. You mean passing on to another person? I had searched for the next Elvira, which was my brilliant idea to get a new Elvira.
Sure.
And then we got one, and she looked good, and she was a good actress, and we tried to foist her off on, you know, parades in the Midwest and stuff, and unfortunately, nobody wanted her, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not, I think it's just so uniquely you, someone just has to come up with another thing.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. They have to do their own thing.
I remember Weird Al said that someone pitched him.
Oh, I love Weird Al.
Let's do it. Oh, he's the best. Yeah. Let's do the search for the next Weird Al, and he was like, I'm the current one. Why would I do that? Why would I help you find my replacement? It's like, that's the worst idea I've ever heard.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking it was a great idea. I actually thought what would be a good idea is to have a bunch of Elviras that I then sent out to malls at Halloween, and people got to take their picture, like, you know, with them sitting on their lap, like Santa Claus.
Oh, that's
Wouldn't
a great
that be
idea.
Awesome? See, of course, I can't fly around to malls doing that and having people sitting on my lap and telling me what they want for
No,
Halloween.
But I think maybe it's not an Elvira. Maybe it's like an El Clara and an El Maureen.
Maybe.
Like, it's just like a class. It's like a class of them that you've sent out.
Yeah, I put them in Elvira training school and everything.
So you don't think Elvira is any kind of a magical creature?
No, you mean where she came from or what she is exactly?
Yeah.
Well, I kind of set it up in my first movie that her mom was a sorceress who had powers and all of that, and her dad was just a mortal TV critic.
Right.
And that's she's got one foot in
there. There's a little bit in there.
Magic world. Yeah.
Yeah.
But people are always saying, is she a vampire? I'm like, I don't know what the hell she is really, but you know. But we just set it up. So she does have a little magic edge can happen.
So what is the book? Is it basically a pictorial history?
It is. I love writing this kind of book because I didn't have to write. It's only pictures.
Yeah, it's a lot of
good awesome.
Pictures.
Yeah, it's just like pictures from my entire career, starting at the very beginning and going through to currently. I mean, my last photo session, which was just probably, a few months ago. And just seeing kind of how the character progressed and how, it kind of changed over the years a little bit. And I don't know. It's just kind of one of those books that guys are going to have hours of fun with. What can I say? I don't know.
Did you like snakes before you had to start wrapping snakes
around? Oh, when I was a little kid, I had snakes all the time. I loved snakes. My dad was always catching snakes for me.
Really?
Yeah, I always loved them. And a fan gave me that snake. When he was like the size of a pencil, and I named him Dick. I don't know. And then he grew to be like 13 feet long and became a girl.
Did.
He had
Hey, come on now.
And I had to give him to a zoo because he got too heavy and too big to handle.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
Yeah,
did they put a donated by Elvira plaque on the thing?
I don't think they did.
What a waste.
Some place in the valley called the Snake Pit. Anyway, yeah, I actually got confiscated by the police.
Oh, okay, all right, okay, yeah, that was a different story.
Yeah, it was a different story.
More legal
story. Like, I didn't really give it. Okay.
Is the book out now?
The book is out starting today.
Starting today?
Yes.
The
October 5th. Is that what day it is? That's the day it's available.
The book is currently available.
That's right. And I'm out at Not Scary Farm doing my shows every night, and I'm signing the book there. In between shows, believe it or not.
That's fantastic. I didn't.
Yeah.
Wait, When is Not Scary Farm just on weekends?
It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay, great.
And I am out there doing two shows a night, dancing and singing. Oh, see how the dancing and singing finally came in handy. Dancing and singing and telling jokes. You have to come down and see
it. I would love to.
Oh, please.
Because we went to Disney because they did all their Halloween stuff. We went to Universal Horror Nights.
Oh, and you haven't come to Knott's?
And we got to come to Knott's now.
Really, I'm telling you, Knott's really has, honestly, I've been to all the others. And I swear, I know I work there, but Knott's really does have the best Halloween haunt because it's just been around for so many years and they keep building on it, you know. So.
Is it mazes or are there horror mazes?
Oh, yeah. There's like 13 mazes and then there's the whole park itself is just super spooky and creepy and then you have a million monsters.
Oh, my God. We'll definitely come. It's
awesome.
Lydia and I, Halloween is our favorite time of year. I want to have you over to our house because we have – Lydia collects – horror stuff.
Oh my God.
So we have like original Gremlins and an Exorcist dummy and all sorts of fun.
Well, I have a ton of crap for you guys.
Oh, please.
I'll go through my storage unit and just start pulling it out.
Please let us be your dumpster. Just get rid of all the stuff that you have.
Oh,
like, we'll take any kind of weird horror stuff.
Wow. Well, you met the right girl then. She's like a Halloween freak.
I got very lucky.
Well, that's fantastic.
I got very lucky because, you know, people would say, like, What are you going to do with all of your weird taxidermy? And I'm like, no, she has weird taxidermy.
Okay.
We have the exact same.
You're the perfect couple.
We are the perfect couple.
No, that's fantastic. You have to be with somebody like that, for God's sake.
It'd be a huge bummer if she was like, you know, Guillermo del Toro's family made him get a separate house. Okay. For his stuff. We're like, get all this shit out of here. So he's like, okay. So we had to buy a separate house for all of his stuff.
Nice.
I know.
I wish I could do that.
That tells her, like, you gotta slow down a little bit. Like, we're running out of room for all this stuff. She's buying fucking werewolf heads from The Howling.
Oh, my God.
Like, God, guess what I just got from the prop store? I'm like, oh, no, we have no more room. We have no more room for stuff.
Yeah, that gets to be a problem. Then you end up, like me, with 9 million storage units out in the desert. Oh, God.
You should tour a collection.
I've thought of that. It's just a matter of, like, getting people out there to – I was just bitching about it earlier with Chad. Like, if you want to find something, you have to start unloading from the front, you know, and it could take you 3 days with three people to, like, get something in the back.
When is there – I mean, obviously not this year because you're working at Knott's, but when is there going to be, like, an Elvira world, like an Elvira walk through a whole park or something for Halloween?
I keep talking about that. I keep talking about it with Knott's, and I don't know that they're ever going to get on the bandwagon with that. But I always think there could be, you know, a year-round Halloween thing, kind of themed Elvira section of a park.
Yeah.
I mean, the two most popular rides at Disneyland are the Haunted Mansion and the Tower of Terror.
Yep.
Those are year-round.
Which is changing to the Guardians of the Galaxy Tower.
Yeah. The excuse people say to me is, oh, well, that's Halloween. And I'm like, what? You don't get it.
It's fun. Listen, people would enjoy it year-round, and then they would super enjoy it at Halloween.
Exactly. Yeah.
Are you getting a note? You're getting a note.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
Dear Cassandra, do you like me? Check yes or no. I see you're
really
passing
like
notes
you.
In class. Would you like to read this note to the entire class?
I'll read it. Where can you buy my book?
I would imagine anywhere books are sold. Amazon.
Not Amazon.
Okay,
yet.
I won't say that.
Yet.
I would imagine.
But it will be coming up at
Amazon.
Okay,
where is the book available?
Well, I will be at Barnes & Noble signing them this month also. Next month. This month. The 26th of October.
Perfect.
I'll do a book signing at Barnes & Noble's at the Grove.
Great.
Also, it's on Elvira.com. And tweeterhead.com. Tweeterhead.com. Yeah, who are awesome. You know, they've made my last three or four maquettes. Four maquettes that are spectacular, you know. Sideshow puts them out, you know, the little like 18-inch high statues. And they're fantastic. And this is the first time their first foray into publishing.
Well,
but
the book is gorgeous.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Elvira.com. Sign up. Order that damn thing today.
Yeah, please do.
Very reasonable a price, too. I must say, it's $44.95. I mean, really, wouldn't you expect to pay? What would you expect to pay, Chris?
God, probably like $900,000.
Yes, exactly.
$800,000?
You only have to pay $44.95.
Oh,
and
my fucking brain!
You also get this bottle of water, which I drank out of.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That'd be one of those promotions where you're like, why did I agree to do this? Gulp. And then I could get a
sip. Yeah, and you just keep drinking.
Was there ever a promotion that you regretted where you're like, oh, this was too much? This
one
was
too much. Oh, yeah. Win a date with Elvira. Oh, God.
What happened?
God.
Did Tom Jones enter?
Tom already won. But,
Tom got first prize.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. But yeah, win a date with Elvira. And it was like something that Universal sponsored or something when I was working for Pepsi. And I win a date. And this guy I won the date with gets to bring a friend along. And I brought, thank God, my publicist.
And a security team.
Yeah, exactly. I should have had a security team. Because the guy that won and his friend were like from some army base in the South somewhere. And they were like 21 years old. And we went to this fancy restaurant in Beverly Hills. And the next thing I know, this guy is standing on the table yelling, I won a date with Elvira! Hey, everybody, look at me!
Oh, shit.
And I'm just like, oh, God.
Now, were you dressed as Elvira?
No, okay. No. Thank God. But he is on a table, drunk on his ass, out of his mind. And he and his friend are knocking shit over and knocking people's tables over. And it's just like two bulls in a china shop. And I excuse myself to go to the bathroom. And my publicist and I ran out that back door so fast.
That's
never
fantastic.
Saw about halfway through the dinner, we were gone. Oh, that was a nightmare, yes. I won't be doing that again anytime
soon.
No,
probably not a good idea. Don't make yourself a prize to the general public.
Yeah, no.
That's
no.
a bad idea.
Yeah, back in the day, we thought that would be a super idea. Yeah, not so much.
And how has social media been? How have you embraced social media? And how has Elvira helped?
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're trying to say.
How has Elvira helped social media?
How did when
social media began to evolve, did you immediately see like, oh, this is a great way to...
I didn't really realize it at first. I mean, just when people started getting home computers, you know, it was like, whoa, what's this? But I actually have to thank the home computers and the social media really for giving Elvira a new life. Because I think had it just been television and carried on, and I didn't have a show on TV, the character would have gone bye-bye.
Yeah.
So I think without, you know, people can go and download stuff on YouTube and everything and see all my old shows and see things, and it keeps the character alive for sure. And with social media, I can get the stuff out there that I'm here and there, because I don't have a weekly TV show, and I never had, I had, but it was... on a very small scale. It wasn't like I was on ABC or CBS,
sure.
where there's millions of people watching. It's always been kind of a do-it-yourself project.
Do you like that it's always been a do-it-yourself project? Or
yeah, on one hand, I do. I mean, it gives you a lot of freedom to do what you want. If you were doing it on a network or something,
right. They
would just be like, no. So yeah, it's a double-edged sword. I don't get the bucks
right.
that people... like you get probably.
What? No.
But I do
I'm
get
a whore.
To do things my way. I want to be a whore too. Yeah. No, it's always been a drag because I really, it's like a small kind of mom and pop business. Only I'm the mom and the pop.
But I think that has helped contribute to it because it's I don't know. It's such an, it was just it so organically grew and it was so much a part of our, I mean like, when I first saw Elvira, I felt like I was in on something special, you know, like really special.
Or seeing a car wreck.
but something that, you know, that just felt like, oh, this is for me. This is exactly for me. And I think if it had originally been presented in a big flashy way,
yep.
I don't know if I would have been as open to it. You know?
I think the cheesiness of it and the cheapness of it, the way it was filmed, you know, for $1.50, really did make people think, she's got to be filming this in Mississippi somewhere in a garage, you know?
Right.
And I still, to this day, meet people who say, oh, you did the local horror hosting show in Shreveport or in Louisville or... You know, and they honestly think I did it there, because it looked so crappy. They couldn't possibly believe it had been done in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So I think the cheesiness and the cheapness of it really did translate to people as, this is just for me. And, you know, another thing I always did that I absolutely it won't even change to this day. I directed everything at one person. I'd always say, hello, darling.
Mm-hmm.
People now write things and go, darlings. And I go, it's never darlings. It's one person. Darling, I'm talking to you and only you. And I talk to the camera like it is one person sitting there alone watching me. And that was kind of a little trick I had that I didn't want to change. I think it really translates to people like, she's talking to me.
Yeah.
Specifically to me.
Yeah, yeah. That's a subtle little hosting thing that really does make a difference.
Yeah.
People, especially now, people don't really watch TV in groups.
Yeah, not so much anymore, unless it's the debates, I guess.
Well, you are wonderful, A. B, The book is gorgeous, and people should buy it, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. They should also go see you at Not Scary Farm if they happen to be in Los Angeles. And, please come over to the house sometime.
I'm coming over right now.
We would love to have you over for dinner. I will not stand on the table and shout.
Well, because your wife will be there.
Yeah. What if she stood on the table?
Oh, well, like, hey, that's okay.
You're not Southern. Why are you doing that exactly?
But, why are you talking like
and
that?
I hope, and I really hope you consider the idea of more seminars or making something available to people about, you know, this brand building or idea, you know, this creative nurturing program. I feel like you could create something that would be of great value to people.
Thank you. Well, that is definitely, you just put like the little seed in my head. That's a fantastic idea.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Cassandra.
Thanks,
it was wonderful to see you.
Great seeing you. Thank you.
Oh, and we end the show by telling people to enjoy. We say enjoy your burrito. It's something we say to people at the end of every show.
Heard.
Would you please take us out?
Hello, darling, and enjoy your burrito.
Elvira just said enjoy your burrito on my program. Get off the table.
Thank you so much.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.